President Donald Trump delivered his State of the Union address last night, taking time to make his case for another term in office, boasting of a strong economy and perhaps encouraging a bit of drama along the way. Trump seemed to snub Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. As Pelosi reached out to shake Trump's hand after he handed her a copy of the speech, the president turned away. And after the remarks, Pelosi made a show of ripping up her copy of the State of the Union in half. Republican Congressman David Schweikert wasn't impressed.
What Speaker Pelosi did of tearing up the speech at the end and some of the other antics, I'm hoping the American people understand the last year of our lives here have been just weaponized politics.
Despite any tension among party leaders, some Arizona Democrats in Congress could still see a way forward. Congressman Greg Stanton saw hope in talk of infrastructure, for example.
I'll work with people that I may have a disagreement on other issues. I'll work with them on issues like infrastructure investment for the betterment of Arizona and the American economy.
And fellow Democrat Tom O'Halloran echoed those sentiments.
We have to find a way to work together, and that's why I'm wearing a purple tie today. We have to find a way to work together and find a real solutions for the American people and the priorities of our country.
Now let's turn to Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground, for a look at what he heard last night. Definitely not wearing a purple tie. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning. Or a purple dress, because Senator Sinema, I think, had a purple dress.
Exactly. So what do you make of this, the president's approach, especially in an election year?
You know, just shocking how humble, how contrite, and how graceful Nancy was in her response.
Great,
you know,
yes.
Just I sat there last night, and I honestly, like, it was such great theater. Right? Because you knew he was going to come in. You know he's the most massively boastful person on the planet. And there isn't a humble gene in his body. And you know she hates him. And it's the scene of the most recent spat, right? And so, you know, when he went up to, he delivered the speeches as his protocol. He didn't shake Pence's hand. You know that was choreographed. He didn't shake Pence's hand, which is normal, and wasn't going to shake her hand. She knew, you know, so but she stuck it out, and he's like, turn right around. You're like, okay, game on. Let's go, you know. But the shocking thing to me was that she, you know, somebody had to prepare her. You had to tell her, because she's on camera the whole time, you're going to hate everything of this, so how are we going to handle this? And you got to figure that out. And in the theater of politics, and it's Shakespearean, it was biblical, it was just, I was having a great time.
How much do those optics matter when it comes to some of the policy areas? I mean, you assume that the Democratic House, for example, isn't going to want to do a lot for the president in an election year. But does the fact that Nancy Pelosi ripped up the speech, like, does that indicate she's not willing to work with him? Is it just for show?
That's what they're going to. I mean, that's the talking point. I mean, it was all over the news this morning. You know, you just heard David Schweikert say, you know, they've weaponized this. You know, she gave them that last night. In doing that. Now, you know, I'm not going to sit here and also simultaneously defend the president. I mean, I almost fell out of my chair when he goes, I'm going to protect, you know, people from losing their health care. He's suing right now to eliminate Obamacare, you know. I saw the New York Times this morning. I was going through all the Truth Watch, you know, the fact check, and it was like, needs clarification. You know, there was like maybe a tenth of it was false and a tenth of it was true. Everything else needed perspective. Of course you're going to need perspective on that. But it was just, you know, that's the stage. And what, you know, what you take away from that is what a speaker or, let's say, a president, what I've learned over time is, you know, it's easy to control a caucus of one. Mm-hmm. And that's why the presidency is such a powerful, or a governorship or anything, is so much more different than anybody else, because you can control you. And she was sitting behind him at one point. They got mad. They started protesting, and she admonished them to, like, oh, we can't do that. Well, she's not internalizing that dialogue while she's saying that as well. So, you know, it was fascinating. I have to say, just on optic, it was the best speech he's ever given. He stayed to script.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. How logistically important was it that he stayed on script, apparently? Because sometimes the red meat for his base comes off script.
Right, but and the red meat for the base was, come on, hanging a Presidential Medal of Freedom around Rush Limbaugh's neck, who's a, you know, stage four cancer now. So we have to be sympathetic and humanize Rush, but we give him the Presidential Medal for in the House, where he has excoriated most Democratic leadership.
And well, how much does that play into Trump's TV reality show? Right. How much does that make it seem even more absurd?
Right. I mean, that every moment was like, you know, if you could if you could put music behind it, there would have been trumpets and horns behind Trump all the time, and there would have been soft violin music behind all of the Lenny Skutnik moments. You know, that was the first guy that they ever did that with Reagan. But he had, you know, multiple vignettes, all with many with African American folks, you know, where, because Donald Trump cares about African Americans, and so, you know, and you know, he's making the pitch. That's why it's a caucus of one is so incredibly, and that stage, he used it really well. I lost my bet last night. I said I couldn't resist talking about impeachment. I'm like, but he didn't. I mean, it was the one self-disciplined thing he did last night was, okay, I'm not going to screw this up. This is going to be too good. And he actually didn't. So
I read one review of the speech that said it was kind of like a toned-down version of one of his campaign rallies. Did you see this as a plea for, not a plea, but making his case for reelection as opposed to where we're at now?
Oh, you're going to hear this, you know, the comeback, the American comeback story. That's going to be the campaign mantra. You saw last night, talk about Arizona. Arizona, he's going to be out here. We're going to see more of the Muellers, right? We're going to see more of the Tuskegee guy and his kid. We're going to see more of that. You're going to see more of border enforcement, you know, folks. Had a Hispanic law enforcement officer for the Border Patrol. You're going to see all that optics out here. I mean, if I'm, I got, you know, this will make people gasp, but I'm like, if I'm Mark Kelly, I'm worried. I am, because he is going to spend, you could feel it last night, that he's going to spend a lot of time in Arizona.
Well, Chuck, let me ask you this then. If we think about the positivity, if you're talking about American comeback, that sounds positive. It sounds like Reagan's Morning in America.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the president to deliver that?
If he's riding that economic wave.
Is it more about
wave,
material?
If the coronavirus doesn't destroy the economic comeback here, yeah, everybody find wood and knock on it and pray to your Lord. He's got to be. As long as the narrative holds about where the economy is, I mean, there was a very successful last Democratic president that survived impeachment. The line he won the first president, it's the economy, stupid. Everything else you're explaining. And you know, I thought the governor of Michigan did a fine job last night, but she's explaining. And she's talking about the comeback not affecting everybody. Yeah, she's right about that in many respects, but it's also affected more people. I mean, we're having a historic employment. I mean, we're at a point in time. I'm not convinced. I think most columnists and pundits would say, oh, well, you know, the president has a little to do with that. You know, it's more like global trends and things that are going on. But, you know, ever since that argument, it's like they want to own what's happening good. Well, man, I went to bed last night and I said, man, I hope the good Lord is watching over him, because, you can also inherit the bad, as we, you know, mm-hmm. I've worked for elected officials who have inherited bad. Jan Brewer, 2009, that was a delightful experience.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. That's Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground. Thank you, as always.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
But first, we turn to another perspective on last night's State of the Union, this time with an eye toward trade and the potential impact on Arizona's relationship with Mexico. With us now for a few minutes is Eric Lee, Executive Director of the North American Research Partnership. Eric, good morning.
Good morning.
So what stood out to you as it relates to comments the president made related to the border, related to trade?
Well, first of all, let's take these, I guess, one by one. Trade is, again, maybe surprisingly, a really important issue for Donald Trump. I mean, he talked about the fact that he actually said unfair trade is perhaps the single biggest reason that I decided to run for president. You know, it's disastrous trade, unfair trade. You know, the entire political class had moved on from NAFTA in, you know, the mid-2000s. Not Donald Trump, though. He really deserves credit for recognizing that trade was an undervalued electoral asset. The other thing that really stands out to me is that he takes full credit for the passage of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement when, in reality, I think that's a lost opportunity to point out how remarkably bipartisan the effort was down at crunch time. I mean, just look at the numbers. Historians will see that USMCA passed the House 385 to 41 and the Senate 89 to 10. I mean, that's a landslide in both houses.
Eric, one thing that stood out to a number of people, and this would affect potentially Arizona-Mexico relations or U.S.-Mexico relations, was the president taking pride, of course, in the border wall, bringing that up again. Did you think that made sense other than as red meat, and could that in any way really frustrate the relationship between the two countries?
I think progress on the wall so far has been in terms of reinforcing fencing that is already there. On the other hand, this is just an extremely important issue for the president and his base. This really bothers Mexico, but there's not a lot that they can do about this. This is all about domestic U.S. politics. Trade, again, as I've said before, does not take place over the border. It takes place at our ports of entry. And our ports of entry are an entirely different system of border security that is managed by even a different agency, the Office of Field Operations. The wall is patrolled by the U.S. Border Patrol, and that is a completely different agency with a different mandate.
But we know that perception is an important concept. In any way, does this affect how Doug Ducey can approach the leaders of Sonora or the leaders of Mexico in any way, or can they really just focus on the economy?
I think the focus there in the Ducey administration is on the economy. Doug Ducey will not be known historically as a big border security governor. But really one that was focused on Arizona's commercial relationship with Mexico and specifically with Sonora. I think that it's interesting to see the state starting to branch out into other parts of Mexico. State of Arizona recently opened offices in Chihuahua City, the capital of state of Chihuahua, as well as Guanajuato, which is in the Bajio region, the central region of Mexico, very industrialized part of Mexico and strategically of strategic economic importance. So I think it's really full speed ahead on trade. Having said that, I mean, there are very, very serious public safety issues in the state of Sonora, as well as in really five of the six Mexican border states.
Okay, Eric, we're going to stop there. That's Eric Lee, Executive Director of the North American Research Partnership. Good to talk with you. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Steve.